The views expressed on this show by guests and the hosts on issues outside of the 9/11 controlled demolition evidence are the opinions of those individuals alone and do not necessarily reflect those of architects and engineers for 9/11 truth.
Welcome to 9/11 Freefall. I'm the host, Andy Steele. Today we're joined by Xander Arena. Xander is a volunteer with AE 9/11 Truth. He works in nuclear medicine. He's a member of Mensa, and he's part of the 9/11 Studies and Outreach Group over at Arizona University. They were on a couple of years ago, maybe more than a couple. And he is the verifications team leader for AE 9/11 Truth. So we're going to be hearing more about that important job, and this is another episode where we're going to be highlighting our unsung heroes, because what Xander does is very important here. We're going to get into some of the work that they do and maybe inspire some other people out there to come join in on this team. Xander, welcome to 9/11 Freefall.
Hey, Andy. Really glad to be here.
So we were just talking right before the show here, and I can't believe I have not had you on this program yet, because you've been such an important pillar on this team, doing this necessary work and safeguarding our petition and making sure that everything is checked and that all the people that end up on that petition are right and in line with our standards. So we're going to get into what that work entails, but I want to know more about you. Our audience wants to know more about you. Let's start with, what were you doing on the day of September 11th, and how did you come to wake up to the evidence of controlled demolition at the World Trade Center?
Thanks, Andy. I love that question. I was in Phoenix, Arizona, and it was early in the morning, and I was getting ready to attend classes at a community college. I happened to catch on Howard Stern's show them discussing the fact that a small commuter plane may have impacted one of the towers, and they were chatting about it while I was brushing my teeth and whatnot. And then I heard live, I went and turned on the television and kind of got a better idea of what was actually happening. And then I witnessed the whole thing unfold from there. Right off the bat, I didn't have any major red flags with the towers themselves, at least not that day. I felt a visceral anger towards our enemies. I remember being enraged that we had been attacked. I wanted justice, vengeance, all the rest of it. And there were some things about the day that did stand out to me as being suspicious, the Pentagon crash site or impact hole or what have you. That whole scene didn't quite resonate. The Shanksville thing was very suspicious. I didn't know if that passenger aircraft had been shot down or what, but I didn't quite buy what the news was telling us. And I actually did see Building 7 come down, or at least I'd heard that it was coming down. I don't quite recall if I saw it on that day, but I definitely heard it fell. And then, that really kind of turned a gear in my mind that something more was happening. And I want to talk a little bit about what really developed my understanding of 9/11, and that was actually the anthrax attacks. At the time, I was a big fan of CSI, and we'd watched that show early, and there was something, we'd just actually seen an episode where there was a serial killer or whatnot, and he had a target, but he chose to kill some other people first so that when he went after his target, it would look less suspicious because there was some connection between him and the target. And there was something about the anthrax attacks just right off the bat that was my sense of what had happened, because you had just a couple of random people getting hit, and then all of a sudden, was Senator Daschle and Leahy were both hit, and I knew that they had been trying to protect our Constitution by delaying the Patriot Act, and the whole thing really just, was a gut check that I thought, there's a lot more going on. This is, I was getting the notion of inside job at that point. And then it was several, maybe just within a few weeks, there was something else that happened, and that was that I was you know, here in Arizona, there was a gentleman named William Cooper who was one of the early, vocal, outspoken individuals about 9/11 being an inside job, controlled demolition, false flag, et cetera, et cetera. And I happened to catch on the news that he had been killed, that they had served a warrant on him. And this was important to me because years earlier, I had actually read his book, Behold a Pale Horse, and it chalked it up to mostly fantastical musings, but there were some things in there that were interesting to me and that seemed to maybe be worth developing further. You know, his overall thrust of the book, though, was that something was coming. And there was something, Andy, that when I heard that news report that they went after him at that time, I almost puked because, like, literally, I had I was sick because I realized that we had just experienced essentially everything that he had written about. From there, you know, I just started really kind of understanding what was happening. I'll share a little bit with the audience. At the time, my father worked for Verizon Telecommunications, not wireless, but he was actually with the phone company on the Eastern Seaboard and was their vice president of national security. So he had a high-level security clearance. He had worked in the senior executive service and things like that. And, you know, for better or worse, I was, within the family, I was kind of internally privy to a lot of the, the notion that we were collecting it all, so to speak, at the outset of the event. So there were things that my dad would say to me, like, in 2001, you know, be careful what you write in emails, things like that, you know. And I grew up in that environment where he would always kind of caution me about using telephones, domestic landlines, et cetera, but this was different. He would mention internet protocols, things like that. And again, just kind of like a cautious, you know, he would never disclose anything outright, but he would say, you know, Zan, be careful with the things that you say, and text communication and email communication and those sorts of things. And, you know, Andy, I'll share with you, at the time I'd kind of was living a little bit of a contrarian lifestyle. So these were warnings that I appreciated. You know, I kind of backed away from 9/11 truth. It was all very overwhelming to me at the time. I think it was emotionally challenging and I just wasn't strong enough to feel as though I could do anything about it. So I'll flash forward a little bit. In 2006-ish, I had joined American Mensa. It was just kind of a fun test of myself. You know, let's take a test and see if I pass it. Let's see what these folks are about. And was actually really enjoying that community, you know, and still do, just, you know, chatting with folks about all kinds of topics. It's just, it's fun to engage with analytical people. And so I was introduced to Loose Change through Mensa. There was a viewing party here in Phoenix, and some local members wanted to air the movie. And so I went to a guy's house, and I watched it. And it was the sequence. It was the first time I'd seen the squibs, you know, the towers were coming down. And, you know, at that point, I think I had a much fuller understanding of what was actually done, which was an important kind of key in me moving in this direction of being such an advocate for 9/11 truth. I began to speak out with my family and others about it at that time. I wasn't, you know, terribly involved as a political activist or anything, but I was certainly, you know, more willing to, you know, to be open about what I felt had happened. And I want to say it would have been 2007 or 2000. Well, it would have been, yeah, probably sometime in 2008, I think, is when I learned Stephen Jones's work, somewhere in that time frame. You know, the years are kind of blurring together, but that really sealed it for me. Because, and to clarify, I took a step back, and I always take a step back from the evidence that is being presented to me, and I try to see if I can't pick it apart. I always try to debunk myself. I try to debunk others. I look at both sides of the argument. You know, I want firm ground to stand on, and with anything that I take on. And I did that with the Brigham work, the nanothermite, and I didn't just find it compelling, but I found it, as our lawyers committee now says, dispositive. There was no other way to interpret the data, to properly interpret the data. And the few, the one piece of work that I'd seen in opposition to the Brigham findings was a study by James Millett, where he had clearly not repeated the same tests, but had not sought to find the same results. What he had done is he had, this is my understanding, is that he had used a low-temperature ashing oven in an oxygen-rich environment, which would have preferentially oxidized any elemental aluminum, thereby, you know, superseding any kind of thermitic reaction, because the low-temperature ashing would have degraded any reactive components within the chips. He didn't heat them up to the DSC temperature of 430, and long story short, he didn't replicate the findings. He had sought to, you know, to obfuscate Brigham's findings. Anyways, at that point, you know, I jumped on board. It was too important. I then learned about what had happened to him. You know, how Dick Cheney or whoever it was had come to the university and offered extra funding, and who knows what other sorts of things were used as leverage. But, you know, to think that one of our champion American scientists could be derided, shut up, silenced, et cetera, for uncovering the truth of something was just too much. Too much at stake. There's so much at stake with this issue. And my feeling of it now is that I like the adage, the empire wears no clothes. We're in a situation where when one critically looks at this, we see that our empire wears no clothes. And if we remember the fable, you know, somebody has to say it. We all have to say it. We can't just, you know, we could, but why would we? Why would we let it go on like it's been going on? And I worry about our country. I worry about our future. I worry about our future scientists and engineers. I worry about, you know, kids growing up and they start to look at this and then all of them having that same painful reaction when they really understand that the buildings could not have come down in the way that they did by a gravitational collapse alone. It's just a disastrous course that we're on to ask this of our people. So this problem for me is bigger than myself, bigger than all of us. I feel fortunate to get to be a part of it. And so the way in which I elect to be a part of it is I help with the verifications team at AE, which is something I'm really excited to get to do. I don't know, Andy, I don't remember when it was exactly that I joined, but I started verifying foreign signatories. So these were architects or engineers that signed to the petition with any country of origin outside of the United States. And, you know, occasionally we get the American expat or something, but, you know, for the most part, it's just individuals outside our borders. But, yeah, I would vet their credentials, ensure that they had undergone their, you know, some sort of similar engineering program or architectural program in their country of origin. And then from there, you know, this, I've worked on what we call the V team, the verification team, for a lot of years, verifying general public supporters who are, you know, we classify anybody that is not distinctly an architect or engineer as a general public supporter. But when you go to the website and you look at the names of now nearly 30,000 other citizens who have signed the petition, general public could mean physicist, mathematician, veteran, surgeon, lawyer, cop, firefighter, nurse, homemaker. It could mean anything, you know, but we have a really robust group of supporters. In fact, I find that those who have the wherewithal to, one, critically examine all the evidence and kind of overcome that emotional anchor or what have you to kind of dislodge, you know, the setting of comfort that keeps people from looking at this issue, are generally incredibly courageous and brilliant people. I just love our supporters, every single one of them, you know, from the guy who's an auto mechanic who just kind of understands how metal behaves in heat or what have you, you know, to the nurse who maybe took a logic class in her, you know, in her curriculum and kind of understands how to critically think about things, you know, to the PhD, you know, physicist or you know, the engineers who are contractors or what have you. We see so many pilots, attorneys, veterans. This is a fun fact. I broke down our veteran population amongst our signatures, and we're slightly higher than the average veteran population, in the public. I think we have it's like 7.5 or 8%, maybe 7.5% of our signatories are veterans that's earned in the military in some capacity. These are all folks who have sworn allegiance to our Constitution. They care about our country. They care about the future of our country. And, you know, what justice looks like for each of us is different. I think some people, want folks sent to prison, executed. Who knows? It spans the gamut. Others simply want resolution, maybe like what they did in South Africa, where they had, hearings. The name's escaping me, but, up with after the crumbling of apartheid, it was kind of like it was a cleansing of the house, and folks talked about what they did, and then it was over. And I don't know. I would like to think that we could get there at least with 9/11. But if not, I'd be happy for the prosecutions. I feel like the problem isn't going away. That in fact, 9/11 in fact was a development of earlier problems, which had been allowed to go unpunished and fester, and it had given those that were able to accomplish such things, essentially a green light for more. And as long as we continue to allow these things to happen without consequence, without investigation, they're not going to stop. And, I think about our rights. Right, our right to privacy, our right to movement, and what have you, and assembly, and the things that were given to us, were God-given, our inalienable rights. One of them is the right to life, and we assume, as part of this system that we all belong to, that we're not going to get blown up when we go to work. I think about the civil servants who were killed inside of the Pentagon, often actually, and how wrong that was. I think about everybody that perished in the towers. The whole thing is so horrible. And so anyways, being a part of V-Team and getting to help others to have a voice, and encourage others to speak out and whatnot. It's really important to me, and I enjoy it. It's rewarding. It's intrinsically rewarding. It's extrinsically rewarding. We see our numbers climb. Andy, I want to talk about that a little bit too, because sometimes I hear folks say, however many years, and you only have 30,000 signatories or what have you, or you only have 3,500 engineers, architects. Over the years, we've had many, many, many more sign. I would estimate we've probably had, maybe about 10,000 people sign, alleging that they're architects or engineers, and most of those folks probably are. But we have a very rigorous verification process. We don't just take your word for it. You have to prove it. You have to prove it by mailing in your credentials. So it's no small feat to get on our petition as a professional. And I think a lot of people, are hesitant, they have trepidation about sending their diploma or what have you over the internet, or maybe really locking in that line. There's plenty that haven't had those fears, and we've now verified, I think it's about 3,300, if I recall correctly. So we do have a lot of support. We don't just put everybody on there that says they support us. With the general public side, it's a little bit easier to add your voice. If you've ever wondered what it might be like to sign the petition, I can attest from my own experience that I have never had any negative repercussion from stating my opinion that we need a new investigation into the controlled demolition of all three World Trade Center towers on September 11, 2001. This has not affected me in my career and my personal development. You know, it's there are times when it's been it's created stress or strain with family members who hold a very different viewpoint, but it's not an insurmountable obstacle. We love each other. We have, you know, wonderful holidays together, and we talk on the phone, and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it doesn't. In fact, I think if you understand 9/11 truth, I think it is important that you become a part of the 9/11 truth movement. It is important for more than just yourself. It is important for all of us, and that goes for those who may even be working in our opposition, Andy. You know, for those folks, I would ask them to think a little bit bigger, because what it is, you know, we have our adversaries or whatnot who, you know, they kind of voice these ridiculous counter narratives and things that it takes the time to pick them apart. They can be dismantled systemically, but nevertheless, they continue, you know, to counter our evidence. Or at least to try, and those folks involved in that, you know, I just hope that you would maybe think about the larger picture and what it is that you've done to America, because it's really, really bad. You know, my God, man, you know, a basic engineering application, you know, such as a finite element analysis can essentially prove our arguments. We've done so with World Trade Center 7. It would be feasible to do the same with World Trade Center 1 and Tower 2. And, you know, we're not the only country in the world that has finite element analysis. You know, so what have we done? We've created leverage, blackmail for other nations now to exploit. I mean, we could just speculate. If one country knows we've done this, they could use that against us, you know, as a pressure point. It's basically weakened us. You know, what I think, whatever we sought to accomplish in this operation has not been beneficial. The few gains that we might have, you know, garnered, such as a massive collection of data. You know, I think we realized that data was the new oil, of course, in the 90s, and that was, in my estimation, that was the principal motivation for the attacks, apart from, you know, destroying lots of evidence of other bad things and some of the buildings and maybe some insurance stuff with some bad actors. You know, I think that if we were sinking our teeth, we as a country, I should say, we were sinking our teeth into telecommunications data and collecting internet and getting the new gold. But, you know, with like the Snowden revelations, you know, that's what do you really gain? I mean, yeah, I guess we have it in a sense, but, you know, people know it's not a secret that everything is recorded and saved and monitored and watched. And so does that really give a bad actor such as a terrorist, you know, does it give us an advantage over them? I don't know. Maybe not. So I just think the whole thing was a really tragic mistake. I think it certainly could have been done differently. But nevertheless, it was done how it was done, and we got to fix it. And this has been, this is now my life's work. You know, I work in clinical healthcare. I work in a hospital. I love to get to work with patients, and I work in a really cool field called nuclear medicine, where we do therapies, we do research, we do all sorts of kinds of exciting things. And I love it. But, you know, it pays the bills and it's rewarding. But I feel like my work to get to the bottom of 9/11 and uncover, well, it, I guess to get resolution on this issue is more important than really anything else.
I think resolution is something that we all want, obviously. I mean, nobody more than me wants to see this on the front page of the New York Times, especially because of the battles that we've had with that newspaper to get them to cover this in a fair and accurate way. I think that we do an important job, even without that final resolution happening yet, just by simply putting it out there, by letting people know about this information, to let them know that these towers were brought down and controlled demolitions on that day, that their media, their government is lying to them, and anybody will know that if they lied about this, they could be lying about other things. It makes people more skeptical, more vigilant. It makes them question new things that come up. It makes the other side have missteps and get crazier and crazier and further unmask themselves. And I think a lot of what we are seeing now in distrust in government, I look at it as a good thing. I think it is a result of the 9/11 truth movement. You talk about all the great people that we have on our petition. I mean, what is so miraculous to me is that we put out calls for action like we're doing now with Congress and people setting up meetings with their representatives, and people respond and they do what is needed, almost like soldiers or something, just from all over the country, just so willing to step up and help out and lend their voice and their name to this call for a new investigation. I mean, there's something cosmic about that everybody sees the importance of this, and they put aside differences and political opinions, you know, religious differences, whatever differences you can look at that divide people, they put that all aside, and everybody talks as one here, at least in terms of the action that is needed. So I think this petition is so important. Now, Xander, we're coming down into our last couple of minutes here, but I want to get your thoughts on the obstacles that we face, media, government, and I want to know what keeps you hopeful and going in this movement, and, you know, continuously doing this meticulous work with the verifications team and keeps you involved and knowing that we're going to have some kind of victory in the end.
Yeah, that's a great question. Objective truth is the answer. So we all have our subjective truths and belief systems and what have you. But, you know, objective truth is shared between all of us. And that is, like you alluded to, it brings us together. Because when people understand something to be true, then there really is no question about it. You know, and so as we get resolution with 9/11, you know, this potentially could be a huge rallying point for so many Americans to come together. So, you know, that's important. You know, just the fact that I know we're on the right side of history is also a feature that keeps me in the game. You know, I'm in it for as long as I can be. You know, as long as I get another circle around the sun, I'm going to be, you know, on the side of the field. And so, yeah, that keeps me going.
That's right. I'm going to be doing this. I may have a few more gray hairs before we have it acknowledged by all the sources that have been condemning us for years, but we will get there. And I think society is going in such a direction that the atmosphere, the environment for this kind of information, this kind of revelation is going to be more conducive towards looking at this more fairly and more scientifically than the powers that be have looked at it in the past. And unfortunately, Xander, we are out of time on the show. I want to thank you so much for the great work that you do here, and I want to tell everybody, if you have time to volunteer, fill out that volunteer form. We could certainly always use help on any team that we have here, but of course the verifications team, because it's such important work, and you'll be working right here with this guy, and he's a great leader. But thank you so much for coming on 9/11 Freefall today.
Hey, thanks very much, Andy. Yep, and anybody out there listening, if you want to join the V-Team and be a part of it, you know, as you said, go to the website, sign the form, and we'll see what we can work together.
This program is on every Thursday night on No Lies Radio at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific, and every other Sunday night on BBS Radio at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. You can also keep track of the archives by going to 911freefall.com. This is Andy Steele. So have a great week. Good luck.